So talking about Texas, landlords of residential properties generally cannot prohibit tenants and guests from lawfully possessing, carrying, transporting, and storing firearms or ammunition. That's the citations are there in the property code and then the corresponding citation to the penal code. In addition, if you're a landlord over mobile homes, you're subject to the same restriction generally. It's just a different chapter of the property code and a different subsection of the penal code. Condominium owners and guests are allowed to carry guns even when there is a lawfully possessed no gun sign posted. Texas law allows three different types of signs that ban guns of carried by different categories of people. But if you're a condominium owner or a guest in a condominium, then you can walk past those signs and they don't apply to you. And then finally, there is a Court of Criminal Appeals case. That's the Texas Supreme Court for criminal matters that finds that condominium owners are co-owners of the common areas. That's under Chapter 82 of the Property Code, the Condominium Act, and it defines condominiums according to in part the owners having a common ownership interest in the common areas. And therefore, under Penal Code Chapter 46.02, as co-owners, they're allowed to carry handguns there just as if they were on their farm property or in their own home. So Texas has these specific sections that that give rights to the residential tenants and owners and prohibit landlords from infringing on those rights. So if you're looking for the key question of this presentation of what options does your landlord client have, it's on this frame right here, and it's also in the paper. Now we're going to go to some more general concepts here. The Second Amendment to the United States Constitution reads a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Texas Constitution has a similar provision, although it has an exception for carrying of arms to protect safety. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court found that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to keep and bear arms. And basically, that case was applying the right to keep arms because the core holding of the case was that an individual has a right to keep operable firearms in their residence for self-protection. And it left the extent of the right to bear arms undefined, and it left the limits of the right to keep arms undefined. So all we have right now is that it's protected in the person's residence, but the court didn't have to face any of the other issues in that case, so it did not address them directly. Although there's some dicta in the case that says that this right is not absolute and it's subject to a regulation of carrying arms in sensitive areas, particularly dangerous guns, and possibly banning dangerous persons like felons and mentally unstable people from having guns. So 2 years later, in 2010, the court heard McDonald versus Chicago. Now, you'll note D.C. is a part of the federal government, so there was no issue of whether the Second Amendment applied to the states. Chicago is a part of the Illinois government, and so this one, in the holding, the court extended this holding to say that the Second Amendment does apply to the states. Under the incorporation doctrine, not every one of the rights in the Bill of Rights applies to the states, but the Second Amendment does. And so these cases, by their terms, only apply to governmental action. They don't stop private actors from infringing on individuals' right to keep and bear arms, at least not directly. So the right to self-defense goes back centuries, goes back to English law. If you prick your finger with a rose bush, even plants exercise the right to defense. This is kind of written into our nature as human beings. And if you've watched any of the Rittenhouse trial, you can see the clash between persons who want to restrict that right and the actual exercise of that right. It's actually a pretty textbook case to bring up a lot of issues regarding self-defense. Texas Penal Code Chapter 9 is entitled Justification, which generally is the doctrine that you can break the law if there's a significant enough need and if you meet other requirements. And that includes the right to self-defense, defense of others, and even defense of property. So in appropriate circumstances, Chapter 9 and the case law in Texas and even the U.S. Supreme Court case law recognizes that a person is allowed to use force to protect himself or other parties and even sometimes property. And in appropriate circumstances, that can be deadly force. So there are 9 categories of persons who are prohibited under federal law from possessing firearms and ammunition, and they're listed there. Convicted felons, that's one of the most significant ones. Fugitives from justice, drug addicts, people who have been adjudicated as mentally defective or involuntarily committed to a mental institution. And then there's some other categories there of people who are, these people are not allowed to possess handguns or ammunition. Now, some of those categories are temporary. For instance, a fugitive from justice, once he gets caught, he's not a fugitive anymore. And if you're not currently a drug user or an addict, then you're not subject to that prohibition. You can have your rights restored if you had them removed by being committed to a mental institution and things like that. But if a person falls under one of those categories at the time, then federal law prohibits that person from possessing ammunition or firearms.